This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Friday today. It's not Thursday. It should be Thursday. I should be doing this on Thursday. But today is kind of a big day. Lots of little things to get done. And yesterday, as I was planning for all that, as I was walking out of work, I think I was just kind of, you know, looking forward to that and going, okay, I got to get home. I got to do this, maybe get a little ahead, blah, 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 blah. Didn't bring the recorder. So opened my trunk, and that was the first time I thought about you need the recorder. I did prepare my notes Wednesday, but just didn't bring the recorder. So I'm actually driving home from my parents' house. Since Friday, we go over and do grocery shopping, although I'm doing grocery shopping at this point, since my dad's still recuperating from his stay in the hospital. We're going to the doctor today. Maybe today he gets the catheter out. That would be spectacular. Because they have been wanting to track the output of his kidneys, so I've been going every morning and emptying the bag and measuring and, you know, doing all that stuff, which is fine. That's just fine. But maybe today is the day that he gets the catheter out. I hope so. We'll see. You just never know. All is well otherwise. My first full week of writing last week on the new book, Windfall, A Seed in Secret, went well. I think I talked about that parable last week or the week before last. Anyways, fascinating parable. Really fascinating parable. Really interesting to me. And the parables are so interesting if you just stop and look, because there's these little throwaway things that Jesus is doing where he's just using a different word here, or he's just phrasing it a different way here, or throwing in a little qualifier there. And if you don't want to pay attention to that qualifier, the parable seems to mean one thing, and then our assumptions add more meanings on top of it. But then as you dig down into it, you realize that that's not really what he meant. So it's really an interesting thing. Anyways, hit my goal last week, 8,000 words. Wasn't sure I was going to, because I mailed out the books to the beta readers last week, and so that cost me a day, I think. And then I had dinner with a buddy that Tuesday, and that's my only dinner at this point. By the time we have dinner and I get home and exercise, it's, you know, the evening's blown. So I typically don't get any writing done on those days, and that happened last week as well. So I'd actually lost Monday and Tuesday, and with the accelerated schedule, that means I was losing 1,750 words. And I was actually struggling a little bit on the Wednesday and Thursday of that week. So game time on Friday and Saturday, it was time to put some words. And I did. I've started a new little thing with that. Much in the same way that no one listens to these podcasts. I have never really posted much on Twitter, even though I have a Twitter feed, Twitter account, whatever we call it. I just haven't posted much on it. For a while, I was using it to remind myself how much I spent at the grocery store, so that's a little weird. But I decided, you know what? I'm going to start posting every day how many words I'm trying to hit, and then after I hit that number of words, how many words I did. Simply because we as humans, our psyches work such that if we think someone's watching us, we change our behavior. And so this is kind of my little way to encourage myself to hit these goals every day. So what I did for the first 4 days of the week is I got on and said, okay, supper's done, yoga done, you know, finances paid, Time for some writing. Goal tonight is 1,000 words, or 750 words, or 2,500 words, whatever, you know. And then after I got it done, I was like, hey, met the goal. 2,600 words written, blah, 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 blah. And what that does is I think it gives me a chance to mentally gear towards the fact that someone is looking over my shoulder. And it keeps me focused. It's like last night, I had hit a spot where I had two storylines going, but I pretty much had said everything I wanted to say until more of the story develops in one of those storylines. There was more to go on the next storyline, but I just needed a little space in there, and I really didn't have any kind of comic relief yet in the book. I had planned to, and I had planned to introduce it in a later chapter, but I thought, no. And I was just on the verge of going, I'll figure it out tomorrow, I'm tired. And then I thought, no, I haven't hit my goal. So I went ahead and I hopped back and rearranged some of the pieces and then got started on a little comedic relief. And it's earlier than I intended, but once I put it in there and then looked at the flow, yeah. So I was supposed to hit 500 words last night and I actually got 625, something like that. And so it's good. I think it's valuable. Everything's puttering along at my major client. Everything's going well. The pieces that I have been working towards, the pieces that I've had, the thought of this is how it's supposed to be done, they're finally locking in place now. And that's encouraging. We made some good progress this week on that. We're having to move some things around and handle some of the oddities, but it's looking good. Good quality work on that this month, and we're going to be really close. Maybe one more month, and we should be ready for beta on that, which is one of the major tools that we are revamping and adding intelligence to, and it seems to be working, so that's cool. Anyways, not much time left since I don't have a 20-minute drive home. I only have about a 15-minute drive home. I came across an article which I found fascinating. I'm always interested in the lies that the flesh tells us, in the roles that we play that are really different than who we are. I'm always fascinated by the way people try to project something and they convince themselves of something to try to take a shortcut to doing the real work in their lives. My wife was watching a reality cooking show and there was a lady on there and you could, her whole countenance was downcast all the time. She looked nervous, she looked afraid, she looked concerned. And then at one point, things didn't go well. And so she started tearing up, and then they cut to her on one of those cutaways where she talks, and she says, because I'm just a very confident person. Everybody knows I'm a confident person. But when she said that, it just really hit me hard. And I thought, you are not a confident person. You tell yourself that for some momentary and temporary relief from your fear, but you have not done the work to be a confident person. It shows all over your face and the way you conduct yourselves with people. One of the things I like about my life is that I frequently to have people compliment me on the fact that I look happy. Walk in and say, hey, there's a guy who's happy. Yep, I am happy. Or filled with joy, whatever you want to call it. My wife and I were at a Renaissance fair a couple of years back. And if I had it to do all over again, I might have done it differently. But my wife and I walked past the fortune tellers. There was no one in there apparently getting their fortune told. And so they were out on the street. And so they said hello. And I turned around, of course, said hello. And they went, wow, beautiful smile, you know. And I don't know, I would have loved to just wander over there and get my fortune told just to be able to spend a little bit of time with them and communicate with them. But, you know, I was with my wife, and I didn't want her to feel weird about it. So, you know, it's okay. Okay, that's fine. But anyways, that, you can tell a lot about a person just by watching them when they think no one else is watching them. So anyways, came across this article, an interview with Rihanna. And this article was actually talking about Rihanna's interview with Vanity Fair. So it was commenting on that. I went back and kind of quickly scanned the Vanity Fair article. This person basically hit all the high points. Tim Tiemann was his name. The title of the article was Rihanna Wrong on Rachel Dolezal, Probably Right About Sex, Love, and Chris Brown. So anyways, what's interesting about this is Rihanna was, in his opinion and in my opinion, was being very honest about the struggles that she faces. Now, why I'm interested in Rihanna is that she is an outlier. She is one of those people who is on the far extremes of human experience. She's famous all over the world. She has a very clear projected image of being a bad girl, a vixen, posts naked pictures of herself, doesn't think anything about taking off her clothes, very much, supposedly, comfortable with using her sex appeal and her ability to inspire lust to forward her agenda. So this is someone who plays this part, and you would think, if there was any such a thing as a woman who is what the archetypal woman that men's lusts would want to exist, you would think it's Rihanna. I never used to think much of her singing voice until we were watching one of the Fast and Furious movies, and it ended with Rihanna's Shut Up and Drive. And actually, that was the first time I listened to her sing something where I thought, yeah, okay, she's got some pipes. And I mean, if you watch the Shut Up and Drive video, it's all about skimpy clothing and swagger and, you know, swing my hips and, you know, sultry looks and all this kind of stuff. And it's all about, oh, I want physical stuff. Oh, I want physical stuff. You know, I mean, it's, because the whole song is about is an analogy for how hot she is and how great she is to drive, so you should just shut up and drive. I mean, it's basically a whole come on, come hither, take me song, using cars as a metaphor. So this is very much the attitude, the role that she projects. So what's fascinating to me is find out, okay, who is this person really? And in this article in Vanity Fair, she actually opened up about a lot of things. One of the things was her frustration about having her name forever be associated as being a victim of Chris Brown's violence. She said, when women have a violent encounter, they're usually just trying to forget it. And she said, everybody keeps bringing it up. And she admitted to the fact that she knew she was supposed to repudiate and reject and to condemn him, but honestly, she said, you know, she still feels sorry for him, and she understands what her part was in the relationship. She says in the interview, I was that girl who felt so that as so much as pain, I was that girl who felt that as much pain as this relationship is, maybe some people are built stronger than others. Maybe I'm one of those people built to handle shit like this. Maybe I'm the person who's almost the guardian angel to this person to be there when they're not strong, when they're not understanding the world, when they just need someone to encourage them in a positive way and say the right thing. So this is fascinating to me because she realizes this relationship is painful, physically and emotionally painful for her. And yet she admits that what's going on in her head is, well, this person's just understood. She's making justifications for it. This person's just misunderstood. If someone was just was kind to him, if someone was just loving to him, if someone was just their guardian angel, then this person could be different. This person. And what's going on here? This, you know, honestly, it doesn't make any sense unless you factor in a foundation of fear and you understand that one of the goals that women have in general on average, I keep having to say that, is to establish a buttress against that fear. And bad boys establish that buttress against that fear better. And women do not process the formula that this bad boy can be as violent to me as he will be towards everyone else. All that's important is he can be violent towards everyone else. And so to not face that wrongheadedness, women pile on these excuses. Well, he's just misunderstood. Well, if I'm there, he won't hit me. Of course he will hit you. Of course he will hit you. But she's honest enough that she says, yeah, I was that person when I was in that. I was. So that's pretty cool. I like that kind of honesty. And she admits that she was very protective of him, that she didn't feel that people understood him. And she said, but after a while, in that situation, you realize that you're the enemy, which that's a very profound statement, that yes, you are the one that's keeping you in that relationship when you should get up and get out. So anyways, that's interesting. She went on also to talk about, the interviewer, backing into my garage, the interviewer said that off stage you seem to have a freewheeling, party-centered life. But Rihanna said, she makes it clear that what we see is what photographers photograph when she goes out. We don't know her. Okay, so this is, again, this is an outlier. This is someone who appears to be that girl that all the guys go, oh, I like that, you know, and all the women go, wow, she's really having fun. I want to be like her. But in fact, what we are evaluating is a specific set of images that are created by people who are paid to create images that elicit certain responses. And Rihanna's response is, you don't know me, which we don't. She said she is very clear that she does not, she does not want to have sex for fun. I think they missed a word in there. She's very clear that she does not want to have sex for fun, as Robertson wonders she might have the freedom to do. She says, quote, if I wanted to, I would completely do that. I'm going to do what makes me feel happy, what I feel like doing, but that would be empty for me. That, to me, is a hollow move. I would wake up the next day feeling like shit. The maintenance of self-respect in a relationship seems paramount to her. When you care enough about somebody and you know that they care about you, then you know they don't disrespect you. It's about my own respect for myself 100%. Of course, she's holding out for the ideal, which everybody is. She said, you have to be screwed over enough times to know, but now I'm hoping for more than these guys can actually give. That's why I haven't been having sex or even really seen anybody, because I don't want to wake up the next day feeling guilty. Well, that's refreshing. She said, I'm a woman. I'm human. I want to have sex. But what am I going to do? Just find the first random cute dude that I think is going to be a great ride for the night, and then tomorrow I wake up feeling empty and hollow? I can't do that to myself. I can't. It has a little bit to do with fame and a lot to do with the woman I am, and that saves me. And she said something else very interesting. Articles sign a deal to make music. We didn't sign to be perfect or to be role models. We're all flawed human beings who are learning and growing and evolving and going through the same bullshit as everybody else. She really likes that word. So, of course, when she imagines, and when she imagines her very extraordinary gentleman who comes along with a lot of patience, because she is defining the boundaries of this relationship. Well, I want a very extraordinary gentleman, which I'm sure means he's good looking, he's pumped, he's ripped, you know, he's got a little bit of an edge to him. But then he also has a lot of patience. So outwardly, you know, he's got really an edge, but he has a lot of bit of patience to him. And she says she imagines he'll come along when she least expected. She's going to come along and sweep me off my feet because this is Princess Complex. And then, you know, when talking about the romantic Mr. Right coming in on a white horse, she quickly corrects her and says, well, probably on a black motorcycle. So she still wants the bad boy. You know, she's still, despite all her fame, despite all her ability to buy protection, despite all the things she's accomplished in her life, she wants somebody that's got that little bad edge to him. And why? Because it's on top of this foundation of fear, and she's really imagining not a man, in my opinion, and most women do this on average in general, not a man to truly build a relationship with. Those are the words. That's the role we play. I want to build a relationship. What she's truly looking for is someone to take care of her, to guess what's going on in her mind, to do what she wants, to be bad enough to take care of anyone who might try to attack her, I'm walking into Walmart today, and there's this little couple that's coming out, and they're obviously dating. I don't think they're married yet. And the guy has the cart. He's wheeling it out of Walmart, and they've got their stuff out of there. They're just going to carry it out. So the guy is going to take the cart, and the woman says, well, just leave the cart. Just leave it. So, but he turns it around. He starts putting it back in with the other carts. Well, just leave it. They're just going to take it out. What's the point of doing that? I mean, who cares? If he wants to put back the cart, let him put back the cart. But she was just determined that her way was the right way to do it. Okay, is it really that big of a deal? No, it's not big of a deal. Except what she's looking for is control. Because control makes her feel safer. And when he doesn't do exactly what she says, she feels like she's not in control. She feels less safe, and she has an emotional reaction to that. So, you know, it's really sad. It's really sad. I'm having some really interesting conversations with my daughter at this point, because my daughter and I are grooving on this topic. I told my daughter, I said, I think you're the one of the only women in the world I can actually talk to this about. And she laughed. So we'll see. It's a very, very interesting thing. It's very, very interesting. But for now, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.